Welcome to the Food and Farming Podcast from AHDB, keeping levy payers informed and at the heart of the conversation.
Hello, I'm John Bates. Thanks for joining us for another episode. We're looking back this time at AHDB's live Funding Your Future event held on Thursday, the 9th of November. Over the day, all four sector chairs took part in Q&A sessions to offer more details about the proposed increase to levy rates. Whether your interest lies with beef and lamb, dairy, pork, or cereals and oilseeds, all of the sessions are available to watch again on the website, ahdb.org.uk. To give you a flavour of the day, you're about to hear the discussion concerning cereals and oilseeds. In the studio was Abby Kay, Deputy Editor of Farmers Weekly, Will Evans, a farmer and levy payer, and Sector Chair Tom Clark. And Tom began by explaining where any additional money would be invested.
AHDB exists to provide farmers the things that would not otherwise be there for them. Farmers are in a unique position, economic position, where we are price takers. We can't invest in things like research, market information and things like that. And the AHDB was set up to perform that critical role. Well, you'll know as well as me that farming isn't getting any easier. We're facing loads of challenges from regulation, policy, climate change. And the Sector Council, made up of levy payers and myself, we believe farmers need AHDB to do more, provide more value back to their businesses. We can only do that more if we have more resources to use. But I do believe every penny we spend in levy can provide more return in value back to the businesses than it costs. So we're putting, we're proposing the levy rises. For growers, they currently pay 46p per tonne for every tonne of cereal sold, and we're proposing to put that up by 12 pence per tonne. That's about 0.2% of the value of a tonne of wheat, for example, at today's market prices.
Isn't it fair to say, though, that if you had been doing your job and increasing productivity over the past 10 years, you probably would have had this increase in levy already?
Interesting. I think because it's a per pence per tonne levy, the amount it raises from an average five-year harvest is pretty much flat. So it's been about £10-11 million a year. The last time the levy was raised was in 2011, so that's 12 years ago. So 12p increase, you could argue, was 1p per tonne, 1p per year increase in the levy. Obviously, we haven't put it up in all that time. I think a lot of the work we do is under the radar, so I don't think a lot of people realise how much AHDB does and how much it underpins our businesses, and I think we have to get a lot better at demonstrating that value. But we have been providing value all those years on a fixed budget. There comes a point where you can't run off a fixed budget forever, and I think we're at that point. And I don't want us to just carry on what we're doing. We're forecast to run a £1.2 million deficit in cereals and oilseeds next year, so we will be looking at what we have to cut if we don't get a levy increase. So I don't want to cut any of the services we provide. We can go into more detail about what some of those are. I want to do more for levy payers and provide more value, and that's why I'm asking for an increase in the investment that levy payers provide us.
Okay. Thanks, Tom. Let's go straight down to Essex to hear from Di Smith.
My question is inspired by an AHDB press release in harvest, which told me that as a farmer, I should think about leaving my wheat crop out in the field to let it dry naturally rather than harvest it and dry it artificially. To be frank, I didn't find it the most useful information at the time, given the wet harvest. And so my question is, how does AHDB keep it real? How do we stop getting too desk bound? How do we keep mud on our boots? How does the AHDB give me the information I need as a farmer out in the field? Thanks.
There you go, Tom. How are you and AHDB going to keep it real?
Well, I've got mud on my boots, actually. I've got very many, many muddy boots. And I'm a farmer, you know, and I've been appointed by the government to do this job, but I was appointed as a levy payer. And my Sector Council, who make the decisions, the team efforts, not just me. We're levy payers too. And I think, you know, HDB has been through some tough times. We've lost the support of levy payers in the potatoes and horticulture sector. I know the reason I came into this job is to make sure we don't lose, because I believe HDB does provide that value, make sure we don't lose that for the cereals and oilseed sector. So I came in to make sure HDB changes and changes to be more in touch with levy payers. Now, that is a particular example, and I remember it was a very wet, frustrating harvest, and we farmers were not in a great mood, and that, I think it was a comment in one of our communications that was pointing out the obvious, really, which was that actually it's a lot better if the sun dries your wheat than if you allow, you have to burn diesel to do it all. So I think we need to bring the levy payers now at the heart of the organisation. So I'm on the board, we're on the sector council, we're getting more involved in how we shape communications. We have our knowledge exchange teams out there talking to real farmers every day. We need to get better at it. I take the hit, Guy. I'm with you. That wasn't our finest moment, but we can get better, and we're going to get better at communicating and making sure what we're doing is relevant and practical and accessible and useful to farmers to make a difference in their businesses.
It's a big change agenda that you're talking about pushing through here. Do you have the experience at leadership level to push through this agenda of change?
I have the experience as a farmer. And I think that is the most important experience, because actually that's who we need to be speaking to and communicating with. And if I, as a farmer in my sector council, as levy payers, don't see the value in what we're doing, then we need to change it. So I'm up for the fight. I didn't take on this job thinking it was going to be easy. I took it on because I knew it was a job that needed doing, and I'll do my best of it. But it's not really just about me. It's about all the team. We've got some fantastic staff. Who do work in the HDB, and it's a journey. You know, it's a process that will change that needs to happen, and it's happening already.
Don't forget that you can submit your questions live using the QR code on the screen, but we've got another from the Farming Forum, BBE, here. I value the work AHDB do to guide efficiency and productivity, but ultimately my ability to maintain a positive margin is dictated by the price at which I can sell. So basically, what is AHDB going to do to ensure that farmers receive a higher price for the goods that they produce? In the most basic terms, if you want more money, get us more money.
That's a fair enough point. And I do think the whole point of HDB is to provide value back to levy payers and our businesses. Some way you can do that is increasing the price, the market price. And we have had some success. I think the other sectors of the HDB, the livestock sectors, beef, lamb, pork, maybe more opportunity to spend money on things like advertising and export markets. Cereals and oilseeds are a commodity product. Not that there's no point in trying to get a higher margin. We recently, a couple of weeks ago, my deputy chairman, Dave Bell, he went to Morocco and he signed an agreement with Morocco where they actually are prepared to pay 3p extra per tonne for UK biscuit wheat. So we are doing some work like that. But overall, you know, wheat, barley, it's a commodity product. And actually, we have a lot of levy payers in Northern Ireland, for example, where there's a lot of feed wheat gets imported into Northern Ireland. And our levy payers in Northern Ireland actually only ever offered a discount to the market price, to the imported price, for their produce. So actually, it's not always about getting above market price; it's getting the market price. And we can do a lot of work with that as well. Our market information informs the whole market. If farmers didn't have access to the information we supply around supply and demand and what the markets are doing, I think, you know, we'd be taking advantage of a lot more often.
Yeah. Okay. We will rattle on because we've got a lot of questions to get through. Question from Big Bal on the Farming Forum. At present, I can only see 6 growers on the Cereals and Oilseeds Council directing where levy is spent. That's way less than 1% of all levy payers represented. Could a system be implemented to have a vote on all future projects before getting funding granted so each individual levy payer can have their say?
I'm not against. I would love more levy payers to be involved in our decision-making, and I would love more feedback from levy payers. We ran Shape the Future consultation last year, and we had a good response, but it was about 5%, we reckon, of all the levy payers that exist engaged in that by registering with us. I would like to see much more engagement, and I think that's part of raising the profile of AHDB and making people more aware of what we do. Part of our proposals for the money we're going to increased levy we're going to be able to spend is about £1 million extra per year in research. And actually, I don't want to sit and decide, or even have the levy council sit and decide what that's spent on by ourselves. I want levy payers to suggest. I want them to drive and target where we spend that, because ultimately we're here to solve levy payers' problems and give them solutions. So if they tell us what areas they want us to research in, we're going to have many channels which they can do that. We will then undertake necessary research or trials on our farm networks to get the answers. So we want that. The point about six levy payers on the levy council, on the sector council, actually by my count it's nine. Nine out of 13 on the council currently are grower levy payers. We have a further two members who are supply chain levy payers, and we have two members who are there for their expertise in international trade and agronomy. So we do need to have the right skill set to do the right work and have the right knowledge to help direct all of the decisions we take. But I think, 83% of the levy is paid by growers, and that's 17% by the supply chain. We've got 70% representation from growers and about 15% from the supply chain on the, and it's a pretty good balance. I'm always open. If anyone else out there wants to apply to join the sector council, we recruit every year, and I would love to have more contributions from levy payers, and please get involved. I don't have any fear of that at all.
Can I just ask on the structure and governance of AHDB? Is the model of being a government arm's length body the right one going into the future? I mean, you're putting forward this proposal for a levy increase. It's got to get signed off by ministers. Spirit Coffee could have it sat on a desk for 8 months. Does it allow you to be fleet of foot and nimble in this modern world?
So, because we're raising, people don't have a choice about whether they pay the levy. You know, it's basically a tax. And therefore, and we were set up by law, so by Parliament. So we're not.
Is that the right approach now, though?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't see how, if it's a voluntary, if you're going to compel everybody to pay the levy, there has to be the framework to do that. If it's a voluntary levy, loads of people won't pay. The beauty of the levy, the purpose of the levy, is that everybody can benefit from what we've used the levy for. Therefore, everybody contributes. If everybody contributes, you have to have compulsion, and that means, I think, you have to be set up in law. We have been engaging with the government about the framework and the rules, the exact rules that govern how we operate ourselves and what we're allowed to do, and we've got a few changes through. I think we've got some more ideas about things that could make us more nimble, more flexible, more agile in the future. But I mean, if you look at the sectors that don't have a levy, they don't have the resources available, they don't have the expertise, they can't draw on everything that we can in the sectors that remain. And I think that is really why I'm here. I want them to safeguard that future. All our whole consultation is called Funding Your Future. Yes, we're asking for money, but it's coming back to you. It's to make your future right. And I think you can't do that without the backup of the government and the law when you're compelling everyone to pay. So there are limits, but I think we can be better, certainly.
It's time now. We're going to move on to Assurance, Red Tractor, and we're going to start with a video from Clive Bailey.
Hi, my questions are all around the Red Tractor Greener Farm commitment issue and the trust issues this seems to have caused between farmers and AHDB. Could you confirm how Tim Ryecroft, the AHDB CEO, voted on this issue as his position on Red Tractor's or AFS's board? If he didn't vote personally, who from AHDB did vote in favour of it? Was GFC discussed and voted upon by sector boards? If so, what were those discussions? And what was the result of any votes on this issue? Did AHDB consult formally with any farmer levy payers outside of the boards on the Greener Farm Commitment? And finally, what is AHDB's current position on the introduction of GFC by Red Tractor in the future? Thank you.
A whole host of questions there on Greener
Farm Commitment. Why ask one when you can ask five?
Well, exactly. So do you want to have a go at answering them?
Yeah, no, it's obviously massive issue at the moment, and I think Red Tractor certainly not uncontroversial. So the specific questions he's asked there, yes. So we are HDB are on the ownership board of Red Tractor, one of six organisations there, and we have Tim sits on the main board. Actually, and I think this is public record, AHDB has been calling for change at Red Tractor for nearly just over 2 years now. And change of the kind that I think a lot of the complaints and the controversy that's been boiling up would see as positive. You know, we want to see a partnership there between producers and consumers, not being consumer-led, and not seeing assurance as a vehicle where value can be extracted from growers and then it's shared. So it's on record, it's public record that we cut our funding to Red Tractor just over 2 years ago. It's also, I think it's fairly well recognised that we've been pushing on the ownership board for change at Red Tractor for over a year, and that recently we've joined now with the recent move by the NFU to institute a review of Red Tractor. So we had questions about Green Farm Commitment, you know, from a little while back. I think.
Did you support it though?
I think Tim Michael wasn't at the meeting where it was finally agreed. We had someone else there, and I don't believe there was actually a vote. I think there was a very robust discussion among the people on the board there about what form it should take, how it should be better consulted with.
But did you in the end agree to move forward?
I think we agreed to the changes that were proposed. The HDB is one voice there, and we, as I say, have been pushing. We can't make change by ourselves.
In hindsight, to agree.
I think it's clear that there's been mistakes at Red Tractor. I think it's clear that...
On the part of AHDB, though.
I think so there was another question there that Clive asked about whether this has all been discussed by sector boards, and it hadn't. And I think that is a mistake. We didn't know that was coming particularly. We hadn't had a lot of visibility. And, that won't happen again. And actually, now our approach to Red Tractor is definitely on the agenda of all the sector councils. So, lessons to learn.
How is that criticism landing at Red Tractor? How are they responding to that?
It's not for me to say. I am not party to the discussions. I mean, that's above my pay grade. But I feed into those discussions. And I think we've got an ownership board meeting next week where actually all of these calls for different views and stuff. And so something that cereals and oilseeds in particular can do is our last meeting, we actually agreed to conduct a review of all the assurance processes for imported grain as much as for domestically produced grain, and compare the sort of regime that someone importing from Canada or Germany or wherever has to go through to get their grain into the UK, and whether how that stacks up with what we're asked to do on our farms and the grain that our grain has to meet. So that's something that will feed into the further reviews of assurance, which are much wider and which have been conducted within Red Tractor. But those discussions are going to take place, I think, in the next couple of weeks, and we'll see whether what we're calling for, which is a much more wide-ranging review than the two reviews, I think, which NFU have called for, will land. But, on that ownership body of Red Tractor, if you include the HDB as a farmer organisation, representing farmers, which I hope we do, then actually there's a majority of farming unions and us. So I think the direction of travel will be clear.
You talk about an independent review. How are you going to guarantee that independence? Who are you pushing for to carry out this review?
Again, I'm not going to sit on the board. I think it will have to come to that board, and there will be views there, and we'll just see. I will learn when they've decided as much as anyone else.
Okay. We can talk about Red Tractor all day, I'm sure. So we will move on to a question. It's a good one from Plowman 1963 on the Farming Forum. Will you support and work towards an alternative assurance scheme for UK farm produce to compete with Red Tractor, as this clearly falls within your remit to find new ways to promote UK produce? What do you think about that, Tom?
Yeah, there are plenty of... So lots of countries have levies and levy boards, and it's not unusual and not hard to find examples of levy boards that do run, for example, their own assurance scheme. The way that HDB has chosen to carry out that function in the past has been, well, through helping to set up Red Tractor in particular, but also Scottish Quality Cereals, SQC, in Scotland as well. And it is, again, I'm sort of touched on already, that we're going to have this review and feed into that wider review of assurance. I think it is something that we need to consider directly. And question's gone now. But the question is it our job to find alternative assurance arrangements? I think it's our job to make sure that assurance arrangements are fit for purpose and are serving, bringing value back to the levy payer, which is our whole point. Yeah.
Do you prefer to improve the existing system than bring in a new?
Well, I think you start from where you are, don't you? I mean, I can't reinvent the world overnight. But I think you know,
even you,
me. We are where we are, and we can only improve things the way we can. But I'm happy to look at the whole spread, and that will be informed. That whole debate can be informed by the independent role and the evidence that AHDB can provide. We're not a commercial organisation. We are funded by levy payers who are overwhelmingly certain cereals and oilseeds growers, but also from the supply chain. We are that independent voice. We do have that focus on the evidence, and that's what we can do. And I want any debate that is going to ensue on this to be based on the evidence and then based with a view to what new arrangements might be able to supply that's not currently supplied by the current system, and then whether the current system can adapt to that, whether it can't. But as I say, this is going to carry on for some time, so I'm going to watch and watch the debate with great interest and with an interest in the outcome as well. But we will inform and supply evidence as far as we can.
Okay. Another question from the Farming Forum from Mr. New. I do love the Farming Forum code names. It's a very good question. Why are AHDB not finding a market for unassured grains? It seems between them and Red Tractor, AIC, unassured outlets are diminishing rapidly. It's certainly harder finding an unassured market for my crops than it was 5 years ago.
Yes, so unassured grain. There is a smaller market for unassured grain, and it's precisely because grain is assured that there is a bigger market for it. Is it AHDB's job to find a market for unassured grain? I'm not sure that's what I mean when I'm talking about reviewing assurance. I understand, and I know many people will be aware that Red Tractor themselves are coming up with what they are going to call an entry-level standard, which is the legal minimum, really, to supply feed. It's not exactly unassured, but it will be a way of accessing markets with less rigorous, and some would say, you know, the criticism is, and I'm not saying it is, but, you know, gold plating of the legal minimum through Red Tractor. But so they're going to launch others. I think if there was an obvious gap in the market, and again, HDB exists to provide the things that aren't provided by the market that provide value. If the market for unassured grain is less valuable, shouldn't we be helping other assurance schemes rather than, you know, with different levels that access all those end markets rather than trying to find a market for grain which isn't assured? I'm not sure. But, I mean, happy to consider all sort of requests from any quarter.
Do you think that as a result of what's happened in the last few weeks, though, a lot of farmers might think, you know what, I've had enough of Red Tractor, forget it, tired of it, not going to deal with it anymore. No, therefore, there might be a lot more unassured grain on the market.
There might be, yes. Yeah, so this study, which I've spoken about already, which Cereals and Oilseeds have commissioned, will look at how unassured, well, how grain, domestic grain, could enter the, you know, sort of theoretically, how it could enter the all UKN markets outside of the current assurance scheme. So it will be looking at what sort of testing regime you'd have to have, what sort of certification and traceability you would need outside of the current Red Tractor. So I'm not saying that it's going to come up with a scheme which is different from Red Tractor, but it will at least lay out the groundwork so everyone can see what was involved, see the costs that were involved, and there may well be farmers that would like to use that system. But what we can do is lay out all the facts and let farmers choose if that's something that they want to pursue.
We've got a live question now. Don't forget you can submit yours using the QR code on the screen. This one is from Katie. You're asking for an increase in our levy, yet in Cornwall we have less activity than we did. Currently our closest monitor farm is Cheltenham, that's 4 hours away. How are we supposed to access that resource? We've had two previously, why hasn't it been renewed?
Really good question. I would love you to have a monitor farm in Cornwall. I'd love there to be a monitor farm in every county. I would love us to do more. As I said, I think we need to do more. And what AHDB has been doing previously is less and less and less because we have a fixed budget. Our you know, we raise about 10, 11 million pounds a year from the levy. 10, 11 million pounds a year 12 years ago brought a lot more than it does now. We reckon our spending power has reduced by 40%. Farmers will know our costs are increasing generally. It's no different from the HDB. And therefore, you know, you've been getting less. And I do compare this to chocolate bars, you know. It's a Mars bar costs 30p, yeah? And it's always cost 30p because they don't want to put the price up. But the Mars bar you get for 30p has been shrinking and shrinking and shrinking, and you're getting less for the same amount of money. And it came to a point, you know, with, I think, the epitome of this was Toblerone, where they actually made the gaps between the triangles so big that they actually produced the Toblerone, which was more like a bike rack, you know? And consumers reacted. They said, that is not a Toblerone. Don't give us this, you know. Charge us a proper price and give us the proper Toblerone. And that, I think, is what HDB needs to do. 12 years on the same flat budget has meant we're doing less. And I want us to do more. And that's why we need more investment from levy payers. So I want to give Cornwall and the West Coast. I was up in Scotland recently talking to them. You know, the challenges they face are the challenges we're all going to face in the future with more extreme weather, needing a wider variety of varieties of cereals to be able to grow. We need to do more research to find those answers, to give options to growers. And to do that, we do need more resources. So that is why I'm asking for this 12p increase for growers, similar increases for other processors and the merchants as well, so that we can do more, so that we can give more value back. And that question, I think, hits the nail on the head. I want there to be a winter farm in Cornwall.
We're hungry now.
I wasn't expecting chocolate chat today.
So we've got a second live question. This one is from Frustrated. Do you collect levy on cereals fed on farm? If not, wouldn't that be a useful step rather than a large increase? Why no connection to the crops and sugar beet sector? Is looking at another assurance scheme good use of levy? So three questions in one there.
So we don't. So the levy is, and it's all set out in law by Parliament, what we can raise levies on. And the levy is due on any tonne of cereal sold in the UK. So if you're growing grain on your farm to feed your own cattle or for your own farm-safe seed, there's no levy due on that. And then the levy is collected when you sell grain to a merchant. So actually, we don't collect levy that might well be due on any grain that was sold between farmers. And I don't propose trying to set up. So the levy is collected by the merchants. So it's deducted. When you get your grain invoice back, you'll see there's a line there that says how much levy has been deducted. They collect it for us and pass it on. I'm not proposing that we either try and work out a mechanism where we, and it would be for Parliament and not for me, but I'm not proposing to them that they come up with a system whereby we could charge farmers for growing grain on their own farm and using it on their own farm. I don't think that is where we need to be. And I'm not proposing that we start some kind of system where farmers would have to invoice each other and deduct levy and pay it to us either. I think the system we've got works, I think it's broadly fair.
I just said that, Tom, as someone who feeds a lot of homegrown cereals to the ring. Yeah, okay. We will move on. We've got a video question again from David Miller.
Hello, my name's David Miller. I'm a strategic farm safety HDB. And my question, which is directed to the cereals and oilseeds specifically, how can the HDB ensure that the farmer-driven independent research and innovation from all of the strategic and monitor farms can be collated and offered in a form which reaches a wider audience than it currently achieves? In my opinion and experience, the majority of farmers are unaware of a lot of the invaluable trials and work that is being carried out by these farmers. Thank you.
It's a fantastic question. David is our monitor farmer for the South, and the work that he does on his farm is so interesting and so valuable. And it goes for all of our strategic farms and even a lot of our monitor farms, where the information that we can provide there could unlock so many answers and so much value for other farmers if they went. We get really good attendance when we have monitor farmers, strategic farm meetings. But obviously, you know, when it's raining, it's a different story. If it's good weather you've been waiting for on farm, you need to get on farm. You can't always attend meetings. And actually, if the monitor farm is further away, you can't always get to those meetings. And it's wrong that all of that value is sort of hard to access. And that's why I think we need to do better at making it more available online, having more monitor farms so that you've got some closer to you as well. But that requires investment and making the type of stuff that you can get used to. Going around a farm or kind of strategic farm is so much more rich and valuable to a farmer. And farmers learn best from other farmers and be able to see things practically. But there is a level of information that we could provide maybe afterwards and online and in other ways that would enable a lot of that really key information to be spread much further. And that's what I would like to see us doing. I'm pushing on an open door there, David. I think that's very good use for some of these extra money that I'm asking for.
Got just under half an hour left. Do keep your live questions coming in, but don't forget that if they don't get answered today, they will get answered over the next couple of weeks. A question from Terrier on the Farming Forum about digital grain passports now. 85% of the HGB funding comes from farmers. How many of these want digital grain passports? What will be the cost of this? How much of it will be paid by farmers? And what will be the payback of this initiative to growers in pounds spent to pounds returned? Wow, big question.
Yeah, so, I mean, long before I was ever involved with the HGB, there's been proposals for replacing the paper passports we have with digital ones. And in the past, the HGB has, you know, we're here to provide what the industry says it needs and wants and would and not value. And so HGB in the past has tried to invent a digital grain passport and presented it back a couple of times now to the industry, and always it's been found wanting, and there's been people who didn't want it and didn't agree with what we were proposing. So we just need to stop trying. So with AHDB currently has no proposals for a digital grain passport at all. And we've said to the industry, if it's what you want, and when I say the industry, I mean the farming unions, but also the grain traders and the end users as well. And we've said, if this is really what you want, and a lot of the time the argument for a digital passport is it's 2023. Why are we filling out pieces of paper? And the answer probably is because it works quite well. But if you think it can work better, if you think there's value there and something you want, then please get together, agree what you want, agree the shape of it, agree what the business case is, so be able to tell us what the value is that it provides, and then come back to the HGB, to my sector council of levy payers, and present that business case, and then we can decide whether we think that is a good use of levy payers' money or not. And I understand those discussions, you know, the HGB has been helping to facilitate some of those discussions in the industry, and I understand that they are coming up with a proposal. It will be ready when it's ready, and when it's ready, it will come to the HGB, and we will have to decide whether that is a good use of levy payers' money or not. And if the value of what they're proposing isn't obvious that it's valuing, the value derived to growers, and it's much more to supply chain. I mean, I'm not preempting it, but if that's what it shows, then maybe we need to look at what we do with levies in the following year in terms of if we are going to fund that and the benefit is mainly, for example, the merchants or the supply chain, then maybe actually the levy needs to increase more for them or rather than for growers. I mean, I don't think growers should be subsidising something that provides value elsewhere. So open mind, but with a view that actually we have limited resources. Even with this increase, we're going to have limited resources. And if we're being asked to spend a lot of money on something, we will be looking very hard at whether the value that provides is worth it compared to the other things we could be spending it on.
So there's a follow-up question. You've kind of already answered this in a way, but there's a follow-up question from Grass and Grain on the Farming Forum. And he said it, or he or she has said it, if there's to be a digital passport, and you've obviously answered that, do you think there would be value, though, in if there was one, if that was something you were going to support, if it was able to hold quality data for which farmers, we're both growers, for which we may get paid, e.g. protein, moisture, Hagberg, special weight?
Yeah, so I was at a meeting last week up in NFU Scotland, and there was talk at that committee, you know, about how they used to get paid a premium for some, you know, not just meeting the spec, but going a little bit above the spec, and they're going to be pushing for that and stuff. So actually that could be some way that the digital grain passport might provide extra value to growers. And I think, you know, I'm not speaking for them, but I know a lot of the farming unions, it's a key point that actually if you know, whatever system is put in place, it's going to be more technology-based. It's going to be some learning curves and things like that with putting it in place. One of the paybacks is going to be what is the information that you get back and how quickly and how can that provide value back to your business. And it's all about value over and over again, saying that word more than anything else. But good question, grass and grain, and we'll certainly as a sector council be looking for that sort of opportunity to unlock value when a business case, when and if they agree, when that business case comes to sector council.
Tom, I just want to ask you quickly about AHGB's role in defending the industry from reputational damage. That's been highlighted as one of the things that's important for levy payers. Do you think that you're doing a good job in the sector of doing that?
So, this question gets asked a lot of my colleagues on the sort of dairy sector council and with beef and lamb, because a lot of the, you're a livestock farmer as well, so, a lot of the controversy and reputational work is around animal welfare, animal vegan and all of that sort of stuff. Obviously, I'm a plant-based sector, so I think there's a lot less of an issue in stills and oilseeds in terms of reputation. And consequently, it's not a major focus of what we do in stills and oilseeds. As I say, a lot of our work is pre-farm gate, helping farmers get better and make value through what they can do and what's in their control, rather than trying to influence the world beyond the farm gate too much. But we can, where we can, we will. But I think I'm not sure what shape a reputational program would take in a wheat market or in the barley market.
Can I just challenge you on that though?
Please.
Saying that there isn't really a role for HGB to play. So I did a quick Google search and found this year there have been loads of articles on crop protection from a range of news outlets: Daily Mail, BBC, The Guardian. So a few headlines that I've read. UK fails to ban 36 harmful pesticides outlawed for use in the EU. UK labelled toxic poster child of Europe by pesticide campaigners. UK must cut pesticide use to tackle climate crisis. Greenhouse gas emissions of pesticides overlooked, say campaigners. Farming destroyed UK rivers to meet food demand. Did Roundup cause my cancer? I mean, the industry is taking a pummeling, let's be real, and AHGB is completely absent. What are you going to do?
I angle that, it's a good point. And, a lot of the river stuff is, poultry in along the Wye and stuff, but, grain feeds poultry. So there is an issue there, actually. I do agree with you. I mean, I think when it comes to lobbying and reputation, I think probably HGB in the cereals and oilseed sector has taken a step back and allowed the farming unions to really lead the charge there. And we used to do, when we had horticulture as one of our sectors, we used to do a lot more work on things like pesticides and making a case for emus and emergency derogations and things like that. And that will involve a lot more justification of that side of things. And obviously with the loss of horticulture, that's not an area where we do focus as much as where we used to. So, good challenge, actually. And I think that's something we can look at in the future.
We've got a live question, and do keep them coming in using the QR code. This one's from Jim Padfield. UK farming productivity has flatlined ever since AHDB was formed. Other countries have moved forward. Why is this, Tom?
Really good question. As I said before, the levy we raise, and I can definitely speak from Jules and Aussie's perspective, yeah? But what we do is raise a levy, and it's representative about 0.2% of the value of a ton of grain. There are other countries that don't have any subsidies, like Australia and New Zealand. They raise levies, and there, I think in New Zealand it's 0.9, just under 1%, and just in Australia it's just over 1% of the value of a ton of grain. That gives them resources, and they're saving our Scottish cousins and our Wales. I think English farmers in particular have been terrible at working together, at cooperating to unlock value. And I think EHDB is one of the few organisations that can exist to bring farmers together to invest in the things that do unlock productivity and can provide that role. In many ways, even with this increase, our levy will be among the lowest of the levy raising organisations in Ireland, for example, Cheggers, or if you're not an Irish speaker, I always used to say to desk. but their budget for the whole of Irish agriculture is five times the size of the HDB budget. And, you know, their agricultural sector is important, but it's smaller than the UK. So, you know, UK farmers, particularly in cereals and oilseeds, are missing out on this extra value, this extra productivity, which we can help unlock. So it's another reason why I think we need more, HDB to do more, and to do more, obviously, we need to raise money. But as I said before, I believe the value from that investment comes back to the industry.
We've got another video question now from Heather Oldfield.
Hi, I'm Heather Oldfield, Lincolnshire Beef and Arable Farmer and Business Development Manager for Elsham Seeds. So my question is, with the increase in levy charges for growers, you highlight that you're going to spend at least £1 million on research, and this will be directed by levy payers. My question is, how will this be achieved? And more importantly, how will the information that you get from your research be disseminated for maximum impact?
Must be hearing cows in the background now, isn't it? It's a really good question, Heather. I'm not sure if I spelled it out, but the increase that we're proposing will raise about £3 million extra on an average harvest for our budgets, and obviously 1.2 million of that obviously will stop us having to cut back our current provision. About £1 million extra we're proposing to put into research, and I think I said before we want that research driven, targeted and decided by levy payers, not just pet projects for research institutes or people who have got their set view of what they want to research. We actually want those to provide solutions and tools and advice for growers. And you know, frankly, our website is terrible. I know it's terrible. HDB knows it's terrible, and we're looking at making it better. But there is such a wealth of information. A lot of it, though, is in scientific papers, which I don't expect farmers to read, understand, and then make differences on their farm on the basis of a scientific paper. So the other thing we're going to be really hot on is any research which we fund has to have outputs which are useful. Which whether you get a really good communicator who's also a scientist to come out to our monitor farm meetings and speak, or whether we can turn it into tools, really accessible, useful, relevant tools that will help farmers make decisions on farm in their own businesses. And it's going to be a condition of our funding that we get those results from now on, because for too long I think we have, you know, funding research can be on its own can just be disconnected from levy payers. And that's absolutely not what's going to drive value. So, yeah, we are going to be hot on that.
We've got another live question. Really good to see so many of these coming in. Don't forget, if we don't get a chance to answer them today, they will be answered over the next couple of weeks. This one's from Wheat Race. How many levy payer contact details do you hold for knowledge transfer? And where you don't, how will you distribute research outcomes? Good question.
Yes, so really good question. We don't have a definitive list of levy payers. It's something we asked the government to let us have. I've said publicly before, you know, you can't imagine, for example, if we sort of raise a tax, and you can't imagine HMRC, for example, not being able to have all the contact details for all taxpayers. I can't see how that would work, but in our case, we are kind of raising a tax, and the government said that, you know, they have consulted and they don't believe there's a case for us being able to have automatic access to all that information, something I disagree with, and I'm sure we will ask again. What we do have, we've made a big effort, so we are reliant on levy payers giving us their contact details and renewing their permissions with us regularly so that we can continue to have those contact details. We estimate there's about 24,000 in cereals and oilseeds levy payers, and we have contact details for about 18,800 of those. And you know, some of those might not be the main decision maker in the business. Obviously, we're reliant on the information that's provided, and there may be some duplication there as well. But you know, that's not bad. We've made a big effort, and we can do better. But overall, my ask would be that actually we're just allowed to have the information we need to make those connections, and therefore provide more value to our levy payers.
Okay, a question from AJD132 on the Farming Forum. Will the AHDB stop taking money from processors? Personally, I'm happy to pay more levy if the AHDB is only working for farmers in a strong and cooperative way.
good question. So about, I think I said 83% of the levy, so nearly 85% is paid by growers in cereals and oilseeds, and the remainder comes from processors. Much of the work we do, so there is some work we do, which is a benefit mainly to the processors and the merchants. We monitor contaminants, market access and things like that are mainly of benefit. So I don't see a case for grower levy payers paying for things, work that we do, that would primarily benefit processors. And I think processors paying a levy, it's useful to have them in the conversation, because we are all, you know, farmers need a market, and the processor supply chain needs supply. Yeah, so I think they pay a levy, and it contributes probably more than their fair share to the work we do on behalf of growers. I think people in the supply chain realise that they need work that we do to ensure their supply. So I think actually we're actually getting processors, for example, and merchants to pay for stuff which is of benefit to growers. And as I say, I think overall, I mean, it is set out in law by Parliament who pays the levy and who doesn't. So again, I can't decide not to pay processors levy. But I think that gives you a broad flavour. I think we've got more to achieve together, and I think the balance is about right. I think actually probably the processors is paying some levies for benefit of growers, and I think that's a good thing. I've heard the opposite completely as well. I say, why shouldn't they pay more? Why shouldn't processors pay more levy? And then I think they would be asking more of us that was of benefit just to them and not to growers. So I think be careful what you wish for, but I think at the moment it's pretty good. I think if things change in the future when we start doing things, potentially digital grain passport, as I've said, which are obviously and clearly, if it turns out that way, of more benefit elsewhere in the supply chain, we could look at adjusting or asking ministers to adjust the balance. But where it is at the moment, I think I'm happy with, and we'll, you know, keep it under review.
We've got another live question from Katie. Great to see so much participation. Do keep them coming. This is a really big and important question. You said you need the extra money to offer us what we need. We as farmers need a fair price to cover our cost of production, and that isn't happening. Without farmers, all the work you do is irrelevant. Why are none of the stakeholders in the farming cycle who take our money for services managing to survive on reduction in income as we are?
Yeah, well, this is why. I mean, I think, you know, as I said right at the outset, you know, farming has never been more challenging. I think in the past 60 years, farmers haven't been working under such a changing, uncertain environment. And literally the environment, the climate change and everything else, but the supply chains, the markets, the global instability. And we do need to, and that's the whole focus of, I hope I've been getting this message through, that actually the value that we can provide through the HDB will come back to your businesses, whether that's in market price, and I've had an answer about that earlier, or in other ways we can unlock value through working with the supply chain, through giving best practice and new innovations, new research. It's all about increasing the value back to levy payers and making your businesses do better, making my business as a levy payer do better, and my sector council, who are levy payers, their businesses do better. That is the whole point, and that's why I'm asking for greater investment, because I believe that return will come back.
Okay. All right, we have a video question from Richard Heddy.
Hi, it's Richard Heddy from a mixed beef and arable farm in North Buckinghamshire. So my question to the HDB is, what changes are going on to increase the efficiency of the HDB from the inside? We understand that levies have to rise because farm costs are rising, as are yours, and that needs to be covered. But what changes are going on internally to keep the HDB lean and efficient in these times?
Good question. So I have been in post since April Fool's Day this year, and I was on the sector council before that as well. And even in that short time, I've seen when two sectors left the HDB, potato and horticulture, it meant big savings had to be made. Our organisation had to shrink, and that meant our overhead shrank too. I think over the last two or three years, I can't remember the exact figure, I think we've cut about £7 million overall out of our own costs across what we used to do, and we've moved headquarters to a much smaller headquarters. So it is obviously something we've had to do. And that is kind of, this is the turning point, I think. We've been through a whole load of cuts. And, you know, farmers will have seen HDB doing less. And I really, you know, it's not just been cuts to the back office and the things that we can do more efficiently. It's been cuts to the value and the services we can provide. And that's why I think the Sector Council and myself believe this is the time, actually, where now it's time to do more, and to grow, and to get more money in and provide services. I do think we're fairly lean. Because we're set up by government, and, you know, it's public money, you know, and if we were, it was not as lean as a private company could be, because we have procedures and processes which are there to safeguard and make sure we don't abuse that public money, because people don't have a choice whether they pay or not. They can't take their customer away. So there are things we have to do as a public body which seemingly from the outside are red tape and are cost, but actually prevent, you know, that money being wasted overall. But that, I think, has been cut back a lot. And I think we're providing much more efficient services than we ever were. And it's not now about being more efficient; it's now about being more effective, and just doing more as well. So, good question, Richard.
How much does the levy go on things like central costs and pension liabilities then?
So the levy for each sector is ring fenced. We cannot spend any money raised from a cereal or oilseed levy on anything to do with beef or lamb. And the logic of bringing the HDB together is that all of us, if we were separate organisations, would need our own CEO, our own finance director, etc., etc. By coming together, we share those costs. I can't remember exactly. I can't remember the latest budget, but it's not a huge amount of that 10, 11 million. Pension costs, we did inherit the forerunner to the Cereals and Oilseeds Sector Council was the Homegrown Cereals Authority, and they did have a final salary pension scheme. You know, that is still live. So, you know, we have liabilities and responsibilities to fund that. You know, I think it's a minimum amount every year. If you want to start pensions, I think it's just under £300,000 a year. That will obviously diminish over time for the obvious reasons. But, you know, every now and again, there's an actuarial reassessment because they have to look at what they think their lifespans and all the rest of it are going to be. And actually, I think they came back to us asking for £2.5 million to top up the fund. And actually, we negotiated that down to £500,000. So it's something that we do have these extra costs, but, you know, it's something we're always trying to minimise, because what we're about is value back to the levy payers.
It's difficult, but I think some of the last few questions have reflected the, as you touched on, Tom, how difficult it is for farmers at the moment. I mean, we're cash flow, you know, we're all feeling it, aren't we? It's a difficult situation out there, and I suppose a lot of it, farmers are just frustrated about the costs coming, everything coming out of the bank instead of not much coming in. I think it's sort of quite obvious, isn't it, from the questions that we've been asked.
Yes, and I think I'm a farmer, and I've seen the same things happening on my farm too. And you can have a response, and you can see the levy as a cost to your business. And if you remove that cost, you'd be better off. I think the value of what we do is so underestimated. You see that line on your grain invoice that takes the money off. You never see an invoice anywhere that's got that money and the value that we return to our businesses written down. And we haven't been brilliant about publicising ourselves and making it clear that a lot of the information you get from your agronomist, from the Farmers Weekly in terms of market information, or you know, the things that we secure for market access through the supply chain are really under the radar. And it's really easy to just look at the levy as a cost. But actually, I do believe that value is there, and actually we would be poorer without it. We will be poorer without an increase, because we'll have to cut back some of that provision, probably large chunks of it. Levy increase stops that happening, but then we can also improve the services so we get even more value back into levy payers' businesses and provide new solutions through this research that we're proposing to spend our money on too, directed by levy payers. So I do believe I'm only here to help farming do better. And as long as I think that AHDB can do that, that's what I'll be pushing us to do.
Okay. Another live question from Wheat Race. How will you implement the outcomes of the recent RL review?
Yes, so the recommended list, I haven't really touched on that. It's probably our best known piece of work. A lot of people, again, don't realise it's the HDB that found it. But without that, I think, you know, 80% of growers use the RL to help inform their variety decisions. And we have been conducting a review over the last year of all aspects of that. It undergoes review every now and again, and we've had over 900 responses from people, growers included, into how it could be done better. We want to see it. I mean, the recommended list is brilliant if you want to look at the genetic potential for a variety, because, you know, the way the trials are conducted on small plots with maximum inputs in terms of nitrogen and fungicide application, and it really shows what the breeders want you to see, which is, you know, in ideal conditions with wanting for nothing, this variety can yield X. Now, I'd like to see wider trials, so under more different conditions, under more different, in different regions, on different farming systems. So we've got lots more people now who do direct drilling, min-till, regen agriculture, as well as conventional, and, you know, on programs that using less nitrogen, using less fertilizer. And actually, we've got two studies underway currently which look at what the effect on a recommended list might be of a reduced fungicide application or reduced inputs, whether it changes the order, whether it changes the disease resistance and all the rest of it. That is the sort of information that farmers really need to know. Mm-hmm. And actually, so we're going to be remaking the whole recommended list in terms of the paper format it comes out, making the information more accessible. We're launching an app so that farmers can compare varieties. But going forward, we want to provide this more richness of data, more specific to your requirements and your farming systems, and more reflective of the real world in which you'll be growing these crops. So, you know, and that is an example of where we've looked at something we've done for a long time. We've always done it pretty much in the same way. We've asked levy payers how it could be better, how it could be better serve their businesses, and we're going to change it, and it's going to require some investment. We're going to be looking in the same way at RB209 Nutrient Management Guide in the next year or so, looking at how we can change that to make it more relevant so that people can, you know, really have good evidence which inform their decisions about reducing nitrogen fertilisers and other fertilisers as well. So we're going to take each chunk of HDB activity in turn and look at it and extract maximum value and work out how we can do it better.
Tom Clark, Sector Chair of Cereals and Oilseeds, ending the live Q&A session earlier in November. It was presented by Abby Kay, Deputy Editor of Farmers Weekly, and Farmer Will Evans, and form part of AHDB's Funding Your Future, that event which gave levy payers the chance to ask questions about the proposed increase to levy rates. Don't forget, you can watch that session, along with those for the beef and lamb, pork and dairy sectors, on the website, ahdb.org.uk. Stay safe, stay well. I'm John Bates. Thanks for listening. If you have any comments about this podcast or have ideas for future episodes, please email foodandfarming@ahdb.org.uk.